Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks and the Learning College. Today we're going to resume with chapters 3 and 4 of Serpent's Walk by Randolph O. Calverhall. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com. Let's begin. It starts with an epigraph. I do not set much value on the friendship of people who do not succeed in getting disliked by their enemies. Would you believe that's from Mein Kampf and Adolf Hitler? If you're not hated by your enemies, you're no friend of mine, he says. Chapter 3, Sunday, April 6, 2042. Love you too, Wrench grumbled. He glanced up to find Lessing beside him, awash with undulating gray-green light from the row of security TV screens, like some archaic idol submerged beneath the sea. So you got me out of bed. What the hell is it? Lessing fingered the TV camera control console, but the visitor had passed beyond the range of camera 3 and was not yet visible to camera 2. He rubbed sleep out of his eyes. God damn it, he'd been meaning to splice in another camera to cover the blind spot between 2 and 3. Camera 26, down at the bottom of the garden by the factory fence, was also out. Lessing just didn't have the energy. Northern India in April was a cauldron of white-hot heat, and May and June would be worse. Only after the rains broke in July would the parched plains cool off again, and then only a little. Looks like one of your scruffier friends, Wrench remarked mildly. A small, neatly packaged man in his late 30s, his real name was Charles Hanson Wren, but his army footlocker had borne the legend Wren, C-H, and the nickname Wrench had stuck. He was Herman Mulder's house security man. Lessing had charge of the compound in the buildings of Indoco's chemical factory in India, just south of Lucknow, off the Kanpur Road. Lessing said nothing. Look, I'm sorry to get you up. Wrench's tone indicated that he thought it was funny. He smirked up at the wall clock, which read 02:10, and showed teeth so white that everybody thought they were a plate. Actually, they were his own. Wrench was just a trifle jealous. Mulder always chose Lessing as his BG whenever he made one of his infrequent forays out into the chaos that was 21st century India. Sure. Sleeping's a comfort in this heat. Lessing looked at him. Like everybody else in Indico's Lucknow operation, Wrench knew that Lessing shared his bed with Mulder's Indian liaison girl, Jamila Husseini. Nobody gave much of a damn where or with whom the hired help slept. And Wrench didn't care, nor was he himself interested in Jamila. She was overeducated for his tastes, a graduate of the Kennedy School for Special Children in Delhi, and later of Columbia University. Wrench did enjoy knowing everything, however. Too damn nosy, and too much of a comic. One day somebody would hoist the little smartass by his head of glossy dark hair as wavy as an ad for gigolos and drop him off a minaret. An image moved on camera 2's small screen. The visitor halted before the outer gate, glanced around, looked up at the lens mounted above his head, and made a nervous gesture toward the bell. Is Mr. Lessing there? I'm sorry to bother you, him, at this hour. It was the man Lessing had named Doe or Doc, Felix Bauer, as he had learned from Gomez a month after his return to India. Felix Bauer. Wrench pressed a button. A ruby warning light flashed. He's carrying a popper, or else he's wearing a cast iron jockstrap. Lessing picked up the microphone and said, Hello, Bauer. Put your ordnance in the lockbox on the post next to you, then followed the left-hand path around to the rear. The lockbox duly registered the weight of a good-sized pistol and possibly a boot knife as well. The metal detectors pronounced Bauer clean. Only then did Lessing press the double button that opened the gate. At this time of night, the veranda of the senior staff quarters was deserted. Lessing met Bauer at the top of the steps and pointed him to a rattan settee as far away from the main circle of porch furniture as possible. The lighted area had two disadvantages. It teemed with flying insects, and the ceiling fan concealed a surveillance mic. Why make it easy for Wrench to eavesdrop? Bauer sat, licked his lips, and looked about. His glance lingered on the gleaming white refrigerator visible inside the screen door. Lessing took pity on him. Bauer's journey out here from Lucknow at this hour of night must have been a hot, dusty, and thirsty one, and he must have paid the taxiwala a fortune to boot. Lessing got up and came back with two bottles of Indian beer. Well? Lessing decided the German looked terrible. They hadn't met since the New Mexico business in January, but then they had never been friends, or enemies either, just two people doing a job. The other gulped cold beer. Then he said, Einar Hjelming, the Swede you called Panch, is dead. Lessing grunted, how? Shot from ambush. They tried to kill Hollister, your teen, the Britisher too. Missed him by 5 centimeters. Bauer pawed at his graying hair with thin fingers. Who is they? People said you would know. Me? I don't know anything. He did have a question. What about Che, the Australian girl? Rose Thurley is her name. I haven't heard. She went back to Canberra, I think. Well, fine. I'm sorry about Hjelming. He wasn't, but it seemed to mean something to the other man. May I speak frankly? Lessing watched him. Sure. I came to ask you to leave me alone. You don't have to say anything. Just let me go my way. Don't thumb me. Lessing snorted up a nose full of bitter beer. He coughed, wiped his mouth, and growled, What? I mean it. I don't cause problems. There were stories, of course, of mercenaries who were later thumbed, quote-unquote, by their employers or by their comrades. Too much knowledge wasn't smart. Such incidents were fewer since it had become acceptable for nations and corporations and causes and even individuals to hire mercs to do their special ops, special operations. Now the world, the Western world anyway, thought of mercenaries as glamorous samurai, an honor-bound warrior class, the stuff of endless TV series. Bauer knew Lessing's reputation. No one had ever accused him of thumbing before. And, supposing that he had been paid to thumb his squad, Bauer should realize that he'd do the job himself and not hire some grimy city hitman to handle it. Lessing kept blunt numbness of the accusation was wearing off, and Lessing's mind began to work again. Bauer was clearly frightened. His rigid jawline showed it. Was he sane? Paranoia was a common ailment among mercenaries. You didn't learn to suspect every bush, every door, every footstep, and not have some of that caution sift down into the cracks of your immortal soul. Bauer clutched his beer bottle with both hands. People, we do get killed, but not by hitmen, not in Copenhagen or Rio. Lessing, for God's sake. For God's sake, what? I haven't anything to do with this, not with Hjelming, not with Hollister, not with you. What gave you this idea? Who said I was thumbing my squad? Even a breath of this kind of rumor could end a man's career. Worse, could get that man himself thumbed. Bauer hesitated. Nobody said. Nobody came right out. Lessing glared at him. You're stupid, Bauer, really stupid. If I am thumbing, then this is my chance to finish you off. Inside our fence, nobody questions Inigo's business. You could vanish without a trace. He spread his hands on the table, palms up. But think, if I'm not thumbing my squad, then I am going to find out where the rumor started and what I can do about it. If I have to kill, or worse, to keep my reputation clean, I will. Either way, you lose. He began to get to his feet. Do we chat easy or hard? Look, please. Bauer's eyes reflected the flickering light. We have a room in the garage, Lessing remarked. We keep our auto repair tools there. It's soundproof. Goth, I never meant to. I only wanted who, Bauer, who? Copley, in Paris. He never said you were thumbing, just that some people around you might die. I took him to mean, I imagined he meant. Bauer shifted his grip in his beer bottle, holding it horizontally so that he could smash it against the table edge and jab it into his adversary's eyes. Bauer had studied barroom brawling with experts. So had Lessing. He pointed, go ahead and try. The table is woven in rattan, and there's a good chance the bottle won't even break. Do you want to take that chance? He smiled. Bauer sat back down. Just give me your word, yeah? No harm to me. I don't want to know anything. I could even pay you a little. He tapped his rumpled shirt pocket. I don't want your goddamn money. There's nothing to know, no thumbing, and I can't protect either of us until I know what's going on. Then why? Why Helming and Hollister? Why Copley? He gossips a lot with the Euro mercs. He must have heard something. Heard rumors, just crap, bullshit, talk. Helming and Hollister, they weren't just talk, Bauer muttered defiantly. Lessing made a derisive noise. Personal grudges? Violent crime? It's going the rounds, you know. Bauer took the remark seriously. No, not so. You assassinate execs. You kidnap execs and technicians. You shoot spies. But nobody kills off-duty mercenaries. We're only the soldiers, the soldaten, the muscles and the bones. He paused and then finished on a defensive but stubborn note. Why should Copley lie? He said people around you might die. Who's going to kill them? God damn it, who? Indico? Lessing relaxed a trifle, still keeping a wary eye on Bauer's bottle. Bauer had regained both his composure and a measure of defiance. How should I know? Copley only made warnings about you. Maybe somebody else thumbs you, too, later. Bauer sounded crazier than Lessing had thought. He stifled a yawn. It would be good to rid himself of this unwanted guest and get back upstairs to Jamila. It was going on 3 a.m. The German peered into the beer bottle, but it was empty. It was the job, the New Mexico thing, I think. What about it? It was Lessing's turn to sound defensive. Hell, Indico owed me a vacation, and I needed the money. An agent I know made me an offer. See the American Southwest on the budget plan. His plan and his budget. I did what I was told, and I got paid. I don't ask, and I don't tell. Yes, but... Bauer pursed his lips, the picture of a prissy European bureaucrat. Then, you have seen nothing, been told nothing? Lessing pressed one hand to his pajama top. Nothing. Scout's honor. Bauer missed the sarcasm. Truly? Nothing? Not a thing. All we get out here are student protesters. Yankee, go home. That sort of thing. The police stand around until they think we're going to be overrun. Then they make a lathy charge and knock a few heads. It's a local ritual, like the peacock's mating dance. Bauer blinked at him. Lessing said more kindly, look, it's too late for you to go back to Lucknow tonight. Stay over here and take it easy. We can put you up. Tomorrow, after breakfast, we'll talk. Hell, maybe Wrench can get you a security job at the factory. A post? No, I... You frightened of contamination? Pollution? Cyanide-laced rose water? Radioactive kum-kum powder? That's what the Indians claim we make here. He grinned to show he was joking. Bauer only stared at him wide-eyed. I have to get back. My taxi is waiting down by the factory gatehouse. The driver is drinking tea with your watchman. He got to his feet, stiff, dignified, determined, and apologetic all at once. Thank you. Lessing let him go. He couldn't blame the German for not trusting him. Who would? He watched Bauer march down the walk and out of sight around the 6-car garage. Then he trudged back upstairs to the air-conditioned company flat he shared with Jamila. If somebody had it in for their squad, why hadn't they come for him? After all, he was the mission leader. Yet he hadn't heard or seen a thing. His trouble-smelling instinct had never failed him yet. Was he becoming complacent? Senile? Blind in his old age? He decided, tentatively, that Bauer was probably suffering from battle fatigue. The Merc Jerks, as the tabloids cutely named the syndrome. The three-room flat in the squarish, whitewashed senior staff quarters building was semi-dark. Only Lessing's imitation Aladdin's lamp, electric with a 220-volt bulb instead of a wick and oil, burned dim in what the Indico employment brochures gushingly described as the sitting room. The flat was hot and stuffy. Even the big German air conditioning unit couldn't cope with India's heat. Jamila was asleep in the bedroom, one slender arm flung out upon Lessing's pillow, a tumble of raven-wing hair visible above the thin sheet. She stirred, and Lessing paused to look at her. Unlike American women with their broader shoulders and boyish waists, Jamila Husseini came from a softer and more curvaceous mold. She reminded Lessing of the Ajanta frescoes, an oval face with a high forehead, long-lashed eyes, skin the hue of old gold, like a South German on a cloudy day, Wrench said. A tall, slender, long-legged figure, firm, up-tilted breasts, a narrow waist, and thighs like some Hindu goddess from a sculptured frieze. He had once tried to tell Jamila how much he preferred her beauty to American angularity, but he was not good with words. She took him to mean that her hips were to be blunt, fat, and she hadn't forgiven him for a month. She still played tennis furiously every morning with Indico's 7 European women staffers, and he knew how jealous she was of the prettiest of them. She had no need to be. It was they who envied her. He did not wake her, but lay down close by upon the thin, hard mattress. Jamila moved against him, and he began to spiral down into sleep, her unbound tresses tickling his shoulder and filling his nose with pungent jasmine perfume. Yells and noise ripped the fabric of his dream to shreds. He sat up, groaned, combed back his thin, ash-blonde hair, and fumbled his way out onto the flat's tiny balcony. He hadn't dreamed it. There were noises below. He looked out over the black satin darkness, the impenetrable night of India, to the tangled diamond spiderwebs of the factory's lights. Strings of bulbs hung on every tank, pipe, catwalk, and tower, turning the prosaic factory into fairy spires and oriental palaces, richer than Sinbad, more wondrous than the Thousand and One Nights. He squinted down into the courtyard closer by, just beneath the balcony. In the stark glare of the gate, floodlights, he saw a dancing jumble of white pants, white shirts, white teeth, black beards, and dark faces and skins like cut-up scraps of a black-and-white photograph tossed into the air. At first he could make out nothing. One splotch of scarlet in the midst of it all was clear, however, a body on a company stretcher. He could not see the face, but he sensed it was Bauer. Wrench was already at the gate when Lessing arrived. Both had dutifully ensured Indico's Hindustani lessons, or dutifully endured Indico's Hindustani lessons, but this was Jamila Husseini's special duty, and Lessing had to go back, wake her up, and then wait impatiently while she donned the shalwar kameez costume she favored, essentially a tunic and slacks, much different from the Hindu sari. She took along a shawl, which she wrapped around her head and shoulders when she went forward to speak with the plant watchman, the Pathan Chowkidars Mulder had hired to supplement his European security people. The Pathans surrounded her, reporting, reenacting, and gesticulating. Enough dramatic talent for a TV series. He looked down at the stretcher. An arm moved, and he heard breath bubbling beneath the rust-red company blanket. Bauer was alive. God, he was tired. His head hurt, and he couldn't concentrate on poor Bauer. Let the company doctor, the little Bengali gentleman, now chattering with Jamila, handle that. He just waited in automaton whose motor functions had been turned off, but whose sensors were still on. His eyes were a TV camera, recording, but not comprehending. Sharp gravel pricked his slippered feet, and his skin was simultaneously clammy and dry with the unforgiving, relentless heat of the Indian night, the harbinger of the scorching morrow. The air smelled of baked brass, charcoal, alien spices, and warm earth as old as God, all mingled with animal manure and flower scents and people. Endless people, now over a billion in this fifth decade of the 21st century. Jamila said something soothing to the senior chowkidar of the plant. She came back to Lessing and Wrench.
The taxi man struck him, they think. He's not with his vehicle now. Nobody saw any fight.
The stranger, she shot a quizzical glance at Lessing, returned from the compound and went straight toward his taxi. The watchman didn't see him again until he came staggering up from the auto park all bloody. Mahmud Khan took him inside and called the others. Jamila was good, Lessing thought. He had served with dozens of mercs who couldn't make a report as concise as that. He smiled at her, then realized she would think he was patronizing her. Who is he? Jamila asked. It was her job to make any statements to the Indian police.
He will live, Dr. Chakravati interrupted excitedly. Live if we get him to Balrangpur Hospital in time. Mr. and Mr. Lessing, please to give permission for his station wagon. Kuldeep can drive. Any other problems? Reg threw in, speaking with the doctor over the doctor's head to Jamila. Other break-ins? Trouble with the students, the villagers, outsiders? She rubbed at her forehead, pushing her heavy tresses out of her eyes, and then translated for the senior chowkidar. A babble of voices answered her. She replied, "No, nothing." "Somebody go get Mr. Mulder up," Wrench ordered. "Search the plant, the perimeter." He was visibly excited, but then Wrench struck Lessing that way, an overreaction for every occasion. "Bring him on inside," a new and deeper voice said. "We can see to him there. If he's critical, we'll have to drive him to Lucknow." Lessing turned his head to see Bill Goddard, Mulder's senior executive officer. Behind him, a hulking shadow in the darkness, stood Herman Mulder himself. The commotion had brought him down from the mansion. Dr. Chakravarti would have gone on insisting on the station wagon at once, if not sooner, but nobody argued with Goddard. The man was a rock, huge, massive, and solid as the ramparts of the Delhi Red Fort itself. Goddard said, "You, Lessing, you, Red, come with." He ignored Jamila as though she didn't exist. He disliked Indians, even those with European features and light skin like Jamila, and Lessing had often wondered why the company had sent him out to Lucknow, of all places. Lessing gestured, and two of the chowkidars took up the stretcher and carried it through the gate, past the staff quarters, and up the inner drive to the director's house. What a parade! Squat, hairless old Mulder lurching along in front, his bald head as shiny as a dress helmet, then Goddard, wrapped in his own self-importance, then the two Indians, with Bauer, the main float, then Dr. Chakravarti trotting behind, and Wrench and Lessing bringing up the rear. The trained dog act, the big rangy German shepherd, and the nervous, yapping little terrier. The big house was cement block and concrete, a pink monstrosity that looked more like a transistor radio than a residence, the sort of modern bungalow one found everywhere in the best suburbs up and down the subcontinent. It was air-conditioned throughout, so cold that it was almost an affront after the sticky night outside. It smelled of furniture varnish and the disinfectant with which the servants mopped the concrete chip mosaic floor. The cavernous drawing room beyond the screened veranda was empty. There was indeed a Mrs. Mulder, but she appeared so rarely that Wrench called her the fairy godmother. Comes out with her wand 3 times a year. Christmas, the 4th of July, and Indian Independence Day, to sprinkle stars and bless us all. Then poof, back to limbo. The watchman set Bauer's stretcher down, and Dr. Chakravarti knelt for a better look under the popping, fizzing fluorescent lights. "Not so bad as I'd..." "Fine," Goddard snapped. "Fix him up. Who the hell is he?" Lessing stepped forward before Wrench could offer any snide little sarcasms. "Friend of mine. Came to see me. No idea who knifed him or why. Some quarrel with a taxi wallet, maybe." "Charming. All we need is a tangle with the police. Prime Minister Ramanujan's government would love an excuse to send all foreign companies packing and confiscate our installations in the bargain." Goddard looked to Mulder for confirmation, but the old man was watching the doctor, puffy, heavy-lidded eyes as blank as a temple statue's. "The wound is in the chest," the doctor went on, clinically and precisely, as though no one had spoken. "A bandage, antibiotics, rest, he will be all right." Lessing saw that Bauer's eyes were open. "Who stuck you?" "A taxi driver, can you talk?" The other grunted something in German, or maybe it was Flemish or Dutch. Then he said, quite clearly, "Not the taxi man, another. Come for you, or maybe someone else important. I was just a by the way." Mulder opened his mouth to ask a question, but he was interrupted. The double doors at the far end of the room swung open to reveal Mrs. Mulder herself. Without makeup, coiffure, and French chiffon, her fairy godmother magic was sadly lacking. A gaunt, vinegary American housewife in the latter years of menopause, she bore neither wand nor sparkling stars. "Dear," she trilled, "you told me to call you if the red lights came on." She stopped, dismayed by the size of her audience. "Oh, I had no idea." "Red lights?" Mulder asked blankly. Goddard said, "The security alert light. Somebody's gotten inside." "Intrusion," Wrench cried. Neither he nor Lessing had brought weapons. "Which light?" Mulder heaved himself toward his spouse, a plump and hairless white whale. People said he was over 70, but he had the energy of a much younger man.
the little one on the end. The woman dithered. Lessing had never seen anyone actually dither before. Get my... Wrench shrilled. The doctor and the two Chowkidars were in his way, and he did a ridiculous dance to get around them. Lessing knew which light was lit. He had helped install the system himself. Outside, beyond Indico's compound, lay wasteland, a crumbled mosque and a deserted Muslim cemetery that the government wouldn't let anybody uproot. Camera 26 there was out of order. Camera 26 there was out of order, whether by accident or design. That meant that an intruder who knew the layout had a clear route over the plant's back fence all the way up into Mrs. Mulder's formal rose garden behind the mansion. If it wasn't a false alarm, the red light on Mulder's panel indicated a security breach in the main house itself. Weapons? Lessing threw at Mulder. The other, already ahead of him in the corridor leading to the rear of the house, waved a hand and shouted back something that sounded like bedroom. Lessing rounded the corner at the end of the passage. He couldn't see Mulder anymore. The old man must have entered one of the two doors there or gone upstairs. Lessing chose the door to his left and skidded into the dining room. The closed, stuffy darkness smelled of spices and cooking, but the woven bamboo blinds and ornate imitation Mughal furniture were undisturbed. A door at the far end opened into a shadowy hall, beyond which lay the pantry and the serving kitchen. Meals were actually prepared in a separate building, some 20 meters away. From there, a train of servants bore the dishes up to the main house or over to the staff refectory. Even in those days of electric appliances and do-it-yourself housework, old traditions died hard. India had swarmed with servants long before the British had arrived. Now it was only foreigners, the rich, and corporations like Indico who could afford them. Lessing glanced around and snatched up a heavy poultry knife from a drainage board. Any weapon was better than nothing. He checked quickly and found the back door locked. Goddard habitually opened it at dawn for the bearers with their morning bed tea, another Indian custom, and one that Lessing rather enjoyed. He whirled and dashed back out into the hallway, then up the slippery, polished concrete stairs, two at a time. Mulder knelt in the corridor by the door of the master bedroom, hands to his face. A trickle of dark liquid oozed between his fingers. Lessing stopped and made sure he was alive. He crouched down and peered around the door jamb. It was lucky that he had decided to duck. He found himself staring at a gleaming silver belt buckle, black trousers below it, so close he could see the weave of the fabric, and a dark jacket above. An Israeli stitch gun hissed like a striking viper in his ear, and he heard the tiny, deadly explosions blasting 3-centimeter craters in the cement block wall across the stairwell behind him. He reacted as training had taught him. He shoved the big poultry knife up between his adversary's thighs into his abdomen. The other gagged, doubled over, tried ineffectually to bat at Lessing with the stubby gun barrel, and then crumpled over, full on top of him. Blood and entrails splattered Lessing's chest. A gun bellowed from across the room, not a gas-powered stitch gun this time, but gunpowder. Lessing felt nothing. The shot had missed. There were two or more opfos then. Grimly, he set himself to getting free from the thrashing body on top of him and to finding the damn stitch gun. Somebody behind Lessing yelped and a second gun roared there. The voice sounded like wrenches. Goddard must have given him a weapon. With all the concentration of a man defusing a time bomb as the seconds tick away to zero, Lessing fumbled around on the floor for the stitch gun. He found it, clutched at its blood-slippery butt, and rolled to avoid presenting a stationary target. He needn't have bothered. The room was silent except for someone wheezing just above him. He recognized Wrench's breathing. "You okay?" the little man gasped. "You dead? Hey, Lessing." "God damn it, I'm all right. See to the opfos and Mulder. Goddard's bringing the doctors. Stay put if you're wounded." "I told you I'm not hurt. Check Mulder. One of them hit him with a pistol butt or something when he entered the bedroom." He heard voices, noises, footsteps behind him. On the floor, a meter from his face, his erstwhile opponent still twitched feebly. He clambered to his feet and felt his way across the room, past the gigantic double bed with the satin coverlet Mrs. Mulder had imported all the way from Denmark. There, he stumbled over a spindly-legged chair and ended on all fours beside the second Apfo. Moonlight through the tangled drapes picked out splinters of white bone and a dark liquid smear where the man's face should have been. Wrench was a good shot for a non-merc. Or just lucky. Lessing knelt to secure the man's gun, a neat, oil-fragrant Belgian 9mm automatic. Darkness swirled and swam around him. Dimly, ebon upon black, he perceived shapes on the floor beside the body, flat, squarish things. A thought struck him, and he squinted up at the wall behind the bed. A cavity yawned there. Mulder's wall safe stood open. So the object of the intrusion was just simple burglary. Or was it? Bauer's visit so late at night? His talk of thumbing? The stabbing down by the vehicle park? Now this? Too many coincidences. Lessing groped on the polished terrazzo floor. His fingers touched a snarled mass of jangling metallic objects. One of Mrs. Mulder's necklaces, probably. Then five or six of the flat rectangles. They felt like record books of some sort, ledgers or diaries. He held one up to the fitful moonlight. The book's cover was embossed in tarnished gold with a double lightning bolt design above a line of numerals. He slanted it toward the window and read, 1948 to 1955. It couldn't be. That would make the book almost 100 years old, a near antique. Yet it felt real. He didn't know what to think. Mulder had never evinced interest in anything cultural, much less in rare books. Lessing picked up another volume, his curiosity piqued. It was newer, dated 1985 to 1987. Perhaps a dozen similar volumes lay scattered on the floor beneath the safe. Were these what the intruder sought, then? Were they so rare and valuable? They certainly weren't indigo ledgers. Those were kept in the main office at the factory, and Lessing would have recognized them. Nobody had to risk a break-in to see those, anyhow. The company was scrupulous about keeping, quote, open books for the benefit of the Indian government. He looked again, carefully this time. Two or three more of the same set protruded from a black cloth bag under the dead man's shoulder. The Opfos had been seriously desirous of reading material. The double lightning motif nagged at his memory. He turned the book around so that it was upright. The symbols resolved themselves into a design he recognized, one known to every child who had grown up in America. They were not lightning bolts, but runic characters that stood for the letters SS, Schutzstaffel, the elite organization of the German Third Reich in the first half of the 20th century. Lessing goggled at the volume, so surprised that he forgot even the corpse on the floor next to him. The SS was almost a century gone now. The last veteran of the Second World War had been in his grave since about 2025, 17 years before. Yet the media kept the sides, the issues, and the propaganda as current as today's soap operas. Movies, books, and TV dramas refused to let the war go the way of the Crusades, Napoleon, the American Revolution, or a dozen other conflicts. On TV, the SS still marched. The same ancient footage, and the black uniformed troopers still murdered, tortured, and swaggered for the titillation of 21st century American audiences. The SS was money. It sold books, movies, and deodorants just as well as heroic cowboys, sinuous starlets, acid-tongued private eyes, tough mercs, or naked banger porn dancers who were the latest craze back home. None of which explained what these books were doing out here in India. They certainly weren't sadomasochistic Nazi porn. Lessing looked up to find Mulder and Goddard standing over him, Wrench hovering in the rear. End of chapter 30, or chapter 3. Start chapter 4. Two epigraphs. First, my honor is my loyalty. Motto of the SS. Mein Ehre heißt Treue. My honor is my loyalty. And again, a longer one. The Nazis are still with us. Hitler died in Berlin, but his evil offspring still lurk in the ugly corners of the world. Even here in America, the racist, anti-Semitic Nazi beast awaits its chance. It is our sacred promise to our Jewish people that these monsters will never regain so much as a penny's worth of credibility or power. Whatever we have to do to assure this is justified. Let every Jew beware of what lies just beneath the surface of the non-Jewish soul, particularly those who speak of Western, Christian, and hence Aryan heritage. And especially let every Jew keep a little flame of hatred alive in his or her heart for the German, for there is the enemy. And that's from an imaginary book, Zion, Challenge and Response, Zvi Ayalon, Commander of the Vigilantes for Zion, New York, 2035. And that's very similar to what some of the Jew communists said about kill all the Germans and Morgenthau plan of destroying Germany forever. So it's fictional, but it's real. Chapter 4, Monday, April 7th, 2042. No, Wrench insists, they really are the SS. What it's become, anyhow. Lessing didn't want to think about Mulder's secret Nazi connection. He wasn't political. He didn't care, and he wasn't interested either in condemning or joining. He said, "And my mother's Chicky Chicken, the cartoon queen." Wrench clucked and made flapping motions with his elbows. "If you say so." "Look, do you mind? Jamila kept me busy yesterday filing reports with the CID, identifying the opfos, Bauer, statements, the whole mess." "I heard. Two foreigners, car parked in the main road, no ID, just two lost coyotes looking for a home." Coyote was slang for an unemployed mercenary. "South Europeans of some kind, Greeks, Italians." "A Bauer?" "No connection, nothing to do with the burglars or with the taxiwala. Some third man struck him, an Arab maybe. There have been as many of them wandering around India as elsewhere since Israel finished gobbling up the last of their land." "How is Bauer?" "Better. Balrampur Hospital." "Mulder and Goddard think there is a connection. Bauer was a divert. The others went in for the books." "No chance. Mulder and Goddard can go play drop the soap in the shower." There was no reason to tell Wrench about Bauer's fear of Lessing himself. That was obviously irrelevant. "You don't realize the importance of those books. The records of the SS from 1945 to the present." "Stuff the books, sideways. Mulder and Goddard, a pair of closet Nazis. Let them dress up in black uniforms and heil each other till the cows come home." Wrench put on a reproachful expression. "They're the real thing. Goddard is Goering and Mulder is Adolf Hitler reincarnated. I thought only Californians went in for loony cults." Wrench took a turn around the veranda. It was just after dawn, and the sky was still a bowl of lapis lazuli, as glorious as any ever carved by a Mughal craftsman, M-U-G-H-A-L. Later it would be shrouded in white dust haze, and the dry earth would swelter like bricks baking in a kiln. He took up a slice of crunchy dark toast from the silver rack on the table, slathered it with whitish butter, and dunked it in his teacup. Lessing watched. "Well?" "Well, what?" Lessing poured tea for himself and added sugar and milk, Indian fashion. The tea was strong enough to walk by itself, not the yellow dog piss, his father's term, his Aunt Eileen used to make from tea bags. For a moment, India flickered away, and Lessing looked out upon the softer, greener, more familiar contours of his Iowa childhood. Then reality snapped back into place like a loaded magazine, locking into the butt of a pistol. "Do you want to hear about the SS or not?" Lessing sighed. "I don't care. I don't ask questions. They pay, I do. Curiosity kills cats and mercs." Wrench snorted. "Lessing, you eat, you shit, and your feet stink. Otherwise, I'd think you were dead. God, but you're an apolitical animal." Lessing eyed him impassively. "You've two choices, you know. One you join, two you get a rocket up the bunghole. Whoosh!" He pantomimed a skyburst with his toast. "Four choices," Lessing corrected. "Three, let things go on as they are. I do my job, and we're just like before. Four, you pay me off, let me go, and never hear from me again. I told you, I don't talk." Mulder and Goddard won't believe you. You're in or you're thumbed. I argued, but they wouldn't. I told you, I'm not political. You're asking for a fucking bullet, man. Goddard, let him try. But Mulder thinks you may be useful, and he's the one who counts. He tells me, I tell you. Some decision. Lessing gulped tea and waved an iridescent blue-green fly away from the marmalade jar. I join or I get unzipped. He shifted his weight so that his belt holster bulged beneath his beige-colored raw silk bush shirt. He had other weapons as well. Unzipping, quote-unquote, Lessing would be no easy op, unzipping meaning killing. Unzipping your meat suit. At least hear what we've got to say, Wrench demanded. So talk. Lessing gazed out across the sun-drenched courtyard toward Mrs. Mulder's garden. The mango trees were inviting, cool and dark and green against the naked glare from the whitewashed compound and the revolting pink ugliness of the mansion. Colors were never muted in India, never pastel, never soft. Rather, they tore at you like shrill music, like hot spices, like the violent smells of the bazaars. The marketplace. Wrench decided he had Lessing's attention. In 1945, when Germany lost, two submarines arrived in Argentina. Some of the remaining senior officers of the SS were aboard. They brought money, lots of money, a good part of the treasury of the Third Reich. People thought it was lost or stolen down in Bavaria, but it wasn't. I've seen the movie, Lessing scoffed. Martin Bormann in The Promised Land. It's true, though. You can read the historical stuff later if you want. Thanks, when I run out of comic books. It wasn't only Bormann, there were others. Seeing Lessing's look, Wrench hurried on. They founded a colony, they set up businesses, made connections. Later they invested, linked up, developed. They built a series of interlocking corporations. The post-war boom and the recovery of Germany helped those corporations become conglomerates. Then huge international holding companies based in the goddamnedest places. The Nazi family Robinson. What? God, you're a comical asshole. Yes, everything neat and tidy, out of sight, away from the Jews and the Nazi honeys and their network of financial institutions and pressure groups. The Third World made it easier. There are fewer controls here, fewer restrictions, fewer checks, fewer regulations, fewer watchdog agencies. Less hassle with privacy. You can spot outsiders coming like that curl bird in the mango tree over there. He can see all around his nest. Lessing looked, but said nothing. K-O-E-L bird. Which I am not familiar with. They, the SS and their descendants, made friends in local governments. The Third Worlders needed know-how, money, connections, and expertise. Expertise like death camps, torture machines. God damn it, Lessing, that's TV propaganda. It's just crap. You sure? I mean it. Of course. Since the Jews got the Anti-Defamation Amendment added onto the American Constitution back in 2005, it would be a miracle if you had ever heard anything but crap. The Holocaust is now the only legal history. You go to jail for saying different. I've been told. Well, then leave that for later. Let me bring you the story up to date. The SS, what was left of it, had business objectives before and during World War II. When the war was lost, they just kept on, but from other places. Bogota, Asunción, Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Mexico City, Colombo, Damascus, Dhaka, you name it. They realized that the world is heading toward a corporocracy, 5 or 10 international super companies that will run everything worth running by the year 2100. Those super corporations exist now, and they're already dividing up the production and marketing of food, transport, steel and heavy industry, oil, the media, and other commodities. They're mostly conglomerates with fingers in more than one pie. Some of them are owned now by the old money interest. The Japanese and various foreign cartels run others. The Bornigans have a couple. The Jews and their buddies control some big ones. And we, the SS, have the say in 4 or 5. We've been competing for the past 60 years or so, and we're slowly gaining. Lose the war, win the peace. Which ones do you button down Nazi zone? Lessing was interested in spite of himself. I'll let Mulder tell you if he wants, but I'll give you an example, one I saw myself. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a supercorp that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, not with bands and trumpets, or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up, like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around too. Not much, but a little, so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats, lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans, and we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes. Hell, if you can con Granny into buying sugar turds instead of bran farts, then why can't you swing public opinion over to a cause as vital and important as ours? It's hard to get people to love death camps. We don't try. You can't erase 100 years of lying propaganda overnight. We play those aspects down and stress the positive ones instead. The mystique, scientific approach to racial genetics, the efficiency and organization, the dedication, and the heroism. People will buy that. Good people who haven't seen a real American victory for a century now. People who are tired of watching the Jews and the mud races gobble up the world. People who don't want their country run by guys with alien ideas. People who are tired of being shat on and fucked over. But the gas chambers, the Holocaust. Wrench held out his hands, palms up. What gas chambers? Show me one piece of real evidence. There were labor camps, sure, and thousands died from typhus, dysentery, poor treatment, and malnutrition. What do you expect during a war? Your country surrounded, fighting off Russia, Britain, and the United States, the three most powerful nations on earth with manpower and supplies to burn while you're scrounging for undigested grain and the chicken shit. A lot of Germans died. A lot of Americans and Englishmen died too. People die in a war. People died in the camps. People died in the Allied bombings of Dresden and Berlin and Hamburg. But all we ever hear about are the poor, innocent Jews and the awful Holocaust, when in fact there was never any extermination policy, a final solution, or anything like it. Oh, come on, what were the gas chambers for if not for extermination? Oh, there were shootings of partisans, hanging of saboteurs, and the usual atrocities that always happen in every war. But the real use of the so-called gas chambers was for decontamination, ridding the clothing of camp inmates of lice and fleas. Nuremberg, people confessed. Under pressure, Lessing, some real bad pressure, though nobody likes to think about that now. Confessions, either hokum or else the poor bastards hoping for a lighter sentence from the victors. How in hell do you expect me to believe that? All my life, all my parents' lives, everybody has taken the Holocaust for rock-solid truth. Some rocks are less solid than others. This one would wash away with the tide if it weren't for certain interests propping it up. Look at our evidence sometime. In any case, we're slowly replacing those negative images with others, the good bad guy routine. Wrench spooned a tea leaf out of his cup. Outdoors in India, it was wise to do that. It could always be a fly gone in for a swim. What do you think of Jesse James? John Dillinger? Julius Caesar or Genghis Khan? Lessing raised his pale eyebrows. Bad guys, maybe, but nobody hates them. The same with the North Koreans, the Red Chinese, the North Vietnamese, the Confederates, the Romans, the Turks, Attila the mother-humping Hun, for God's sakes. The reality may have been rough, but there's a sort of glitter about most of these dudes. Mean honchos, but respectable. It's all how you package it. Opinion is a goddamn commodity. It's impossible with the Nazis. No, it works with anybody. Remember the Pied Piper, the guy who tootled his flute, stole everybody's kids, ran off with them, and was never seen again, a child abuser. But who hates him? Now he's a dickin' fairy tale. Image, just image. Next you'll make Joseph Mengele over into a naughty, sexy Dr. Joe, every housewife's soap opera wet dream. You're a funny man, Lessing, I mean it. Mengele was a physician and a scholar. He wanted to help his country's war effort at a time when it was needed. Some of his experiments were rough as putting American soldiers next to an A-bomb test or trying Agent Orange in your own men, like the U.S. government did. He didn't do most of the things Jews have accused him of, but he did put people into freezing water in his efforts to develop techniques for the saving of lives of flyers shot down over the North Sea. His experiments were really a lot more humane than those performed by the Russians, the Japanese, or other scientists back when medicine was younger. Nobody advocates such experiments today, but you do have to understand the urgency which existed then. Sure. Like, some guys got good press and others get bad. Compare the Palestinians with the Jewish gangs who murdered both Arabs and Britishers before Israel was founded. Ask any American, he'll tell you the Arabs are murderous terrorists and the Israelis are lovable freedom fighters and heroes. If George Washington had lost, today's kids would be reading about him as George Q. Terrorist, the scourge of decent English folk. You'll never convince enough people to matter. Give it time. Aside from the media, we've been buying up private schools and helping some public ones through philanthropic foundations and working on the churches and the born-agains. The ceiling fan was doing its valiant best, but the veranda had grown hot. Lessing arose, squinting against the raw sunlight pressing in through the vines on the east side of the senior staff quarters building. He stopped in front of Wrench. When and if this happens, what does your little band of supermen want? We're in competition, Lessing. We win, it's our genes that survive and our Western heritage, our Aryan culture, if you like, that provides the model for how people will live on this planet for the next millennium. If we lose and the Israelis win, then they run the bagel shop their way, exactly what they've been trying to do for centuries. If both of the above lose, then the Chinese, the Japanese, or some new booga booga power in the third world gets to pilot the ship on the cruise down to hell. As a white man, I wouldn't want to live in such a mongrel world. So your SS is hot for world domination again. Business as usual. Lessing, you dumb mother... That's the name of the game. That's been it, the whole turd pile, the be-all and the end-all since Cheops built his pyramid. Power, man, power. Who gives the order and what gets done? If you want your kind running the future, then you do what you have to do. And incidentally, thumb the world? Of course not. Why should we want war? Too many atom bombs and killer satellites and city busters out there as it is. And not even cockroaches can live on a nuke planet. We don't want war or slave or colonies. We want a future for our Western heritage, peace and plenty, an efficient government, an end to the social evils that are tearing us up today, and purpose and hope for our kids. If I knew Deutschland über alles, I'd sing. Better the horsed vessel lead. You never mentioned this stuff before. Would you have listened? Mulder had asked me to talk to you, but you never showed any inclination. As apolitical as a cow pie. Then came the break-in, and you found out for yourself. I never saw Indico as a hotbed of far-right radicalism. Indico doesn't need the publicity. It just goes on making fertilizers and pesticides and agrochemicals. It's a subsidiary of Time Industries of Athens, Greece. Time is part of Rocco Corporation of Florence, Italy, and above that, I don't know. We do our jobs, watch the world go by, and quietly work to change public opinion. The sunlight made blinding, silvery dazzles of the cutlery, the teapot, and the milk and sugar pitchers. Lessing picked irritably at his shirt, already stained with perspiration and sticking to his spine. What about the neo-Nazis, the Missouri Seven, the gang who blew up the power station in Munich in 2040? Wrench waved a manicured hand. They're part of it. Every movement needs street troops. Our enemies are tough. We're tougher. Anyhow, there's no such thing as a neo-Nazi. You're either with us or you're part of the problem. A lot of little organizations are called Nazi when they're not. Some who are right off the wall, rubber room material, who mix our ideology with Christianity, survivalism, grassroots American patriotism, gut-level race hatred, with almost anything. Wouldn't surprise me to find a cell of conservative rabbis somewhere passing as Nazis. Oh, sure. And while we're at it, just what do you have in mind for the Jews and the blacks? More gas chambers? I told you there never were such things. None. That was wartime propaganda that the Jews kept going in order to gain sympathy, support, and money for Israel. We don't hate other races or ethnic groups. We just love our own people more. Our civilization is best fitted to run this ball of mud, but that doesn't mean we're going to slaughter all of our fellow inhabitants. If they cooperate, they'll be a damn sight better off than they are right now. Lessing frowned. He could think of nothing to say. As I said, we're in competition with those people for world supremacy. We will win because we are the best fitted to do so. If others choose to live in peace within their own regions, we won't harm them. Those in our territory who are not our people will have to leave and settle elsewhere. It's as simple as that. We're willing to let other ethnic groups have their place in the sun, but as for living with us, running us, or grabbing what we have worked to build up for ourselves, no way. If that takes force to achieve and maintain, then so be it. As the Jews say, never again. No slavery, no labor camps, even if they're not death camps? Nope. Slavery doesn't work. It always ends up, eventually, with mixing between slaves and masters, and then one has a real mess. Look what happened in the U.S. after the Civil War. We'll govern ourselves and do our own work. Others can run their societies the way they want. We'll use force only if others try to dominate us. But what about non-whites in America and other Western countries? They'll have to go elsewhere, establish their own enclaves, set up their own governments, and run their own show the way they want it. They cannot live permanently in our territory. No more minority rule or TV propaganda persuading our kids to go for mixed dating and mongrel mating. That's prejudice. So, it's been the policy in the state of Israel since that country was founded a century ago. No intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews, second-class citizenship for non-Jews, and worse for Arabs. Smile crooked at them and they blow up your house in retaliation. You can call it prejudice if you want, but don't accuse us of having a monopoly on it. And if non-whites don't want to live under your Nazi rule and don't want to go away either? Tough cases demand tough solutions. We will try to sort them out, preferably without violence. Wrench wriggled his fingers in the air. We are going to do this. Either that or watch the future dribble away into a mishmash of alien ideologies and beliefs. Earth is overcrowded as it is, and what's coming will be worse. Over 1 billion Indians, another 1.5 billion Chinese, Africa bursting at the seams. Hunger, war, pestilence, death, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, are riding straight for us unless we head them off at the pass. We've got to take control, got to become efficient, got to weed out the weakness, got to build up our defenses. Otherwise, we, and all the other races too, are doomed. Humanity will go the way of the dinosaurs. Lessing stared at him. You're serious. Really serious. Unscramble the races. In North America. In New York City alone. Send the blacks to Africa. The Chinese Chicanos to Mexico. The Haitians to Haiti, he chortled. The gays to San Francisco. Lessing, you asshole. Hell, even God couldn't do it. It would make the shift of Muslims to Pakistan and Hindus to India back in the last century look like a kindergarten fire drill, by comparison. Well, it will be done, without violence or war if possible. Our movement is international. Our sister organizations in other countries will help the other races and ethnic groups to develop movements of their own. They have their pride and their right to live, just as we have ours. They'll persuade their people to come and live with their own kind. You're out of your motherly mind, Lessing had another thought. What are the mixes, the interracial marriages, the millions of mixed-race kids in the ghettos? Suppose they refuse to go. Wrench got up. The heat was a physical wall at the edge of the veranda. You're right, a problem, but not as bad as we have now with those ghettos in full swing. Sinks of poverty, crime, drugs, AIDS, and hopelessness. The present establishment can't pay the cost of welfare and medical aid for much longer. Those people will be better off separated and living in enclaves of their own than they could ever be with us. Given a worst-case scenario, though, if they don't want to work things out, and if they offer violence, then, and only then, will there be trouble. Even so, it couldn't be as bad as the mess we're heading for now. Well, how do you get them to go? They make them an offer they can't refuse. land elsewhere and other positive inducements if they go quietly, or whatever it takes to get rid of them if they make a fuss. Lessing rubbed the high bridge of his nose. Okay, what about the North American Indian? You going to move white folks out of the United States to give the Indian back his country? Give us a break. We can't right every wrong all the way back to Cain and Abel. We'll do what we can to make territorial homelands for people who want them. That's the best we can offer. You're nuts. I am working for a sack full of certifiable pecans. At least we'll try. We won't just stand around with our fingers up our asses and watch doomsday come rolling in like the politicians and liberals now. Lessing snorted. The rattan porch chair squeaked and crackled as Russ Wrench dragged it back out of the brazen sunshine. How about it, Lessing? He held out a hand. You in or out? What do I tell Mulder? I've already said. I don't give one flying finger jerk about your harebrained cause. You're welcome to it. I work for pay. You pay, I work. Okay, verstanden? Tell your teddy bed Fuhrer that. Wrench shook his head. Money. A hell of a reason to do things. Low class, man. I know. It's not everything. But it'll do until everything comes along. Okay, I'll tell Mulder. He won't like it, and Goddard will beg for your balls on a platter. But Mulder's the boss. He's one of the directors. I don't mean a director of Indico. They're just front men, but a descendant. In the central directorate of the movement. You saved his life, and he likes you. He feigned a thick British accent. A mercenary is a mercenary, what? Lessing opened the screen door. Answer me one last question. Are you one of these descendants? No, just a red-blooded American boy fresh out of Rapid City, South Dakota. How did you get in with this gang? You always struck me as somebody with sense. Just a maverick, I suppose. Wrench shifted to a cowboy twang. Ever since high school, never did believe the cow pucky they taught us in civics class. Started reading. Got interested in political systems, then in history. Then the Third Reich. Met a guy who knew him, guy who knew Mr. Mulder, and here I am. Jamila said you had an advanced degree. Oh, I do, but it didn't completely wreck my ability to think, like it does for some folks. God, a sack full of pecans, Lessing muttered to himself. He dove into the cool shadow beyond the screen door. Wrench stood and blinked after him for a moment. Then followed. And that will end chapters 3 and 4 of Serpent's Walk by Ranulfo Coverhill. As I say, you can find everything we record, including this, at vnnforum.com. So thanks for being with me today, and I'll be back with you again real soon.